It's time I left this place.
I can't keep up. You walk at such a pace.
Don't trouble, child. No need to show me out. It's not your manners I'm concerned about.
Nearly pay you the respect we owe. But, Mother, why this hurry? Must you go?
I must. This house appalls me. No one in it will pay attention for a single minute. Children, I take my leave, much vexed in spirit. I offer good advice, but you won't hear it. You all break in and chatter on and on. It's like a madhouse with a keeper gone. Girl, you talk too much. And I'm afraid you're far too saucy for a lady's maid. You push in everywhere and have your say.
But you boys grow more foolish every day.
To think my grandson should be such a dunce. Oh, I've said 100 times, if I've said it once, that if you keep the course on which you've started, you'll leave your worthy father broken-hearted. And you, his sister, seem so pure, so shy, so innocent, and so demure. But you know what they say about still waters. I pity parents with secretive daughters.
No, Mother.
And as for you, child, let me add that your behavior is extremely bad, and a poor example for these children, too. Their dear, dead mother did far better than you. You're much too free with money, and I'm distressed to see you so elaborately dressed. When it's one's husband that one aims to please, one has no need of costly fripperies.
Oh, madam, really?
You are her brother, sir, and I respect and love you. Yet if I were my son, this lady's good and pious spouse, I would make you welcome in my house. You're full of worldly counsels, which I fear are suitable for decent folk to hear. I have spoken bluntly, sir, but it behooves us not to mince words when righteous fervor moves us.
Your man, Tartuffe, is full of holy speeches.
And practices precisely what he preaches. He's a fine man to be listened to. I will not hear him mocked by fools like you.
Good God! Do you expect me to submit to the tyranny of that carping hypocrite? Must we forego all joys and satisfactions because that bigot censures all our actions?
I hear him talk, and he talks all the time. There's nothing one can do that's not a crime. He rails at everything, your dear Tartuffe.
Whatever he reproves deserves reproof. He's out to save your souls, and all of you must love him as my son would have you do.
Oh, no, grandmother. I could never take to such a rascal, even for my father's sake.
That's how I feel. I shall love this tenable. His every action makes me seethe and tremble with helpless anger, and I have no doubt that he and I will shortly have an out.
Surely it is a shame and a disgrace to see this man who's at the master's place, to see this beggar, who when first he came had not a shoe or shoestring to his name, so far forget himself that he behaves as if the house were his, and we his slaves.
Well, mark my words, your souls would fare far better if you obeyed his precepts to the letter.
Oh, you see him as a saint, I'm far less awed. In fact, I see right through him. He's a fraud. His man wrote the same old words. I'd not trust either with a penny purse.
Say what his servants morals may be, but his great goodness I can guarantee. You all regard him with distaste and fear because he tells you what you love to hear. Condemns your sins, points out your moral flaws, and humbly strives to further heaven's cause.
His sin is all that bothers him. Why isn't he start to fret when folk drop in to visit? Is heaven so outraged by a social call that he must prophesy against us all?
I'll tell you what I think.
If you ask me, he's jealous of my mistress' company.
He's not alone, child, in complaining of all your promiscuous entertaining. Why, the whole neighborhood's upset, I know, by all these carriages that come and go, with crowds of guests parading in and out, and noisy servants loitering about. In all of this, I'm sure there's nothing vicious. But why give people cause to be suspicious?
They need no cause. They'll talk in any case. Madam, this world
malicious tongues might say we locked our doors and turned our friends away. And even if we did, so dreary a thing, do you think those tongues would cease their chattering? One can't fight slander, it's a losing battle. Let us instead ignore their tickle-tackle. Let's strive to live by conscience clear decrees and let the gossips gossip as they please.
If they talk against us, I know the source. It's Daphne and her little husband. Those are the greatest cause for guilt and shame are quickest to besmirch a neighbour's name. When there's a chance for love, they never miss it. When something they see with visits, they're on the road to spread the joy of news, adding to fact what fantasies they choose. By talking up their neighbours' indiscretions, they seek to camouflage their own transgressions, hoping that others' innocent affairs will lend a hue of innocence to theirs, or that their own black guilt will come to seem part of a general shady colour scheme.
All that is quite irrelevant. I doubt that anyone is more virtuous and devout than dear or old. And I'm informed that she condemns your mode of life most vehemently.
Oh, yes, she's strict, devout, and has no taint of worldliness. In short, she seems a saint. But it was time which taught her that disguise. She needs us because she can't be otherwise. As long as her attractions could enthrall, she flushed and flirted and enjoyed it all. But now that they're no longer what they were, she quits a world which fast is quitting her. And wears the veil of virtue to conceal her bankrupt beauty and her lost appeal. That's what becomes of old coquettes today. Distressed when all their lovers fall away, they see no recourse but to play the prude, and so confer style on solitude. Thereafter they severe with everyone, condemning all our actions, pardoning none, and claiming to be pure, austere, and zealous. When if truth were known, they're merely jealous, and cannot bear to see another, though the pleasure time has forced them to forgo. That sort of talk is what you like to hear. Therefore, you'd have us all keep still, my dear, while Madam rattles on the livelong day. Nevertheless, I mean to have my say. I tell you that you're blessed to have Tartuffe dwelling as my son's guest beneath this roof, that heaven has sent him to forestall its wrath by leading you once more to the true path. That all he reprehends is reprehensible, and that you'd better heed him and be sensible. These visits, balls, and parties in which you revel are nothing but inventions of the devil. One never hears a word that's edifying. Nothing but chaff and foolishness and lying, as well as vicious gossip, in which one's neighbour is cut to bits with apron, foil, and sabre. People of sense are driven half insane at such affairs, where noise and folly reign, and reputations perish thick and fast. As a wise preacher said on Sunday last, parties are towers of Babylon, because the guests all babble on with never a pause. And then he told a story. I heard that laughter, and I saw that wink. Go find your silly friends and laugh them all. Enough, I'm going. Don't throw me to the door. I leave this household much dismayed and vexed. I cannot say when I shall see you next. Don't sit there gazing into space. I'll slap some sense into that stupid face. Move! Move, you slut!
I think I'll stay behind. I want no further pieces of her mind. But what a scene she made, and what a din! And how this man Tartuffe has taken her in.
Yes, but her son is even worse to see. His folly will be seen to be believed. In the late trouble, he played an ace part and served his king with wise and loyal heart. But he's quite lost his senses since he fell in Tartuffe's infatuated spell. He drove his brother and left him with his life, preferring him to mother, child, or wife. In him and him alone will he confide, his name is competitor and his guide, the pent and fancy with love, more tender than anything mistress could engender. Fill him with
Doesn't he resent it in just this day when he melts his pride? God bless you, friend. He's surely mad. He worships you. He don't. His pleasing morals of that, his words he quotes, thinking each act a miracle. Each word a rational of those that Moses heard. Tattoo. Much pleased by the way, the victim has an angry word. Dying, tricked him, murdering him, and with his permission, he gathers here a sort of inquisition. Even more wrong is nothing. Dare give up, arrogant advice on how to live. He sermonizes with hungry children, and commonly our women occur not quickly into a church in the pieces to go down a Christian about Jesus. He takes the sin to juxtapose our holy vanity with holy crows.
She stood in the door and said verbatim all she said before. I saw my husband coming up. I think I'd best go upstairs now and take a little rest.
I'll wait to greet you here. Then I must go. I really only time to say hello. Summon about my sister's wedding, please. I think Tartu's against it, that it's an urgent power to withdraw his blessing. As you well know, I find that most distressing. Unless my sister will go there and marry, I want to wed his sister will miscarry, and I'm determined.
Brother, good day.
I'm glad to see you. I was about to go away.
How is the country? I suppose no longer free.
Excuse me, brother, just one moment. Doreen! To put my mind at rest, I always learn the household news the moment I return.
Has all been well? These 2 days I've been gone. How are the family? What's been going on?
Your wife, 2 days ago, had a bad fever and a fierce headache that refused to leave her.
And Tartuffe?
Tartuffe? Oh, he's round and red, bursting with health and excellently fed.
Poor fellow.
That night, the mistress was unable to take a single bite at the dinner table. Her headache pain, she said, was simply hellish.
And Tartuffe?
He ate his meal with relish and zealously devoured in her presence a leg of mutton and a brace of pheasants.
Poor fellow.
Well, the pain continued strong. And so she tossed and tossed the whole night long, now icy cold, now burning like a flame. We sat beside her bed till morning came.
And tattooed.
Why, having eaten, he rose and sought his room, already in a doze, got into his warm bed and snored away in perfect peace until the break of day.
Poor fellow.
After much ado, we tortured into dispatching someone for the doctor. He bled her, and the fever quickly fell.
And tattoo.
He bore it very well. To keep his cheerfulness at any cost and make up for the blood Madame had lost, he drank at lunch 4 beakers full of port.
Poor
fellow. Both are doing well, in short. I'll go and tell Madame that you've expressed keen sympathy and anxious interest.
That girl was laughing in your face, and though I've no wish to offend you, even so, I'm bound to say she had some excuse. How can you possibly be such a goose? Are you so dazed by this man's hocus-pocus that all the world, save him, is out of focus? You've given him clothing, shelter, food, and care. Why must you also...
Brother, stop right there. You do not know the man whom you speak.
I grant you that, but my judgment's not so weak that I can't tell by his effect on others.
When you meet him, you too will be like brothers. There's been no loftier soul since time began. He's a man who... A man who... In short, he is a man. To keep his precepts is to be reborn and view this dunghill of a world with scorn. Yes, thanks to him, I'm a changed man indeed. Under his tutelage, my soul's been freed from earthly loves and every human tie. My mother, children, brother, and wife would die, and I not feel a single moment's pain.
That's a fine sentiment, brother, most humane.
Oh, had you seen Tartuffe as I first knew him, your heart, like mine, would have surrendered to him. He used to come into our church each day
and humbly kneel nearby and start to pray. He'd draw the eyes of everybody there by the deep fervor of his heartfelt prayer. He'd sigh and weep, and sometimes, with a sound of rapture, he would bend and kiss the ground. And when I rose to go, he'd run before to offer me holy water at the door. His serving man, no less devout than he, informed me of his master's poverty. I gave him gifts, but in his humbleness, he begged me every time to give him less. Oh, that's too much, he cried, too much by twice. I don't deserve it, the half serving would suffice. And when I couldn't take it back, he'd share half of it with the poor right then and there. At length, heaven prompted me to take him in to dwell with us and free our souls from sin. He guides our lives, and to protect my honor, stays by my right and keeps an eye upon her. He tells me whom she sees and all she does, and seems more jealous than I ever was. And how austere he is. Why, he can detect a mortal sin where you would least suspect. In smallest trifles, is extremely strict. Last week, his conscience was severely pricked, because while praying, he had bought a flea and killed it. So he felt too awfully.
Good God, man. Have you lost your common sense? Or is this all some joke at my expense? How can you sit there and in all sobriety...
Brother, your language savors of impiety. Too much free thinking's made your faith unsteady. And as I've told you many times already, it will get you into trouble before you're through.
So I've been told before by people like you. Being blind, you'd have all others blind as well. The clear-eyed man you call an infidel, and he who sees through humbug and pretense is charged by you with want of reverence. Oh, spare me your warnings, brother. I have no fear of speaking out for you and heaven to hear against affected zeal and pious knavery. But this true and false in piety, as in bravery, and just as those whose courage shines the most in that are the least impartial. So those whose hearts are truly pure and holy don't make a flashy show of being holy. There's a vast difference, so it seems to be, between true piety and hypocrisy. How do you fail to see it, may I ask? In other ways, quite different than a mask. Gathered sincerity and cunning art, reality and semblance, we told them about. Ah, scarecrow, just like men. Do you hold that a false coin is just as good as gold? Man is a strangely fashioned creature who seldom is content to follow nature, but recklessly pursues his inclinations beyond the rightful bounds of moderation, and often by transgressing reason's laws, perverts a lofty aim or noble cause, a passing observation, but it applies. I see, dear brother, that you're profoundly wise. You have all the insight of the age. You are one clear mind, our only sage. The ear is oracle, it's Cato too, and all mankind are fools compared to you. Brother, I don't pretend to be a sage, nor have I all the wisdom of the age. There's just one insight I would dare to claim. I know that true and false are not the same. And just as there is nothing I more revere than a soul whose faith is steadfast and sincere, nothing that I more cherish and admire than honest zeal and true religious fire, so there is nothing that I find more base than specious piety's dishonest face, than these bold mountebanks, these histrios whose impious mummeries and hollow shows exploit our love of heaven and make a jest of all that men think holiest and best. These calculating souls who offer prayers not to their maker, but as public wares, and seek to buy respect and reputation with lifted eyes and sighs of exultation. These shots, as I say, whose pilgrim souls proceed by way of heaven to earthly goals, who weep and pray, and swindle and extort, who preach the monkish life but haunt the court, who make their zeal a partner of their vice. Such men are vengeful, sly, and cold as ice. And when there is an enemy to defame, they cloak their spite in fair religion's name, their private spleen and malice being made to seem a high and virtuous crusade, until, to mankind's reverent applause, they crucify their foe in heaven's cause. Such knaves are all too common. For the wise, true piety isn't hard to recognize. And happily these present times provide us with bright examples to instruct and guide us. Consider Ariston and Perian. Look at our own, Tachita Mastritan. Their virtue is acknowledged. Who could doubt it? But you won't hear them beat the drum about it. They're never ostentatious, never vain, and their religion's moderate and humane. It's not their way to criticize and chide. They think censorious is a mark of pride. And therefore, letting others preach and rave, they show by deeds how Christians should behave. They think no evil of their fellow man, but judge of him as kindly as they can. They don't intrigue and wangle and conspire. To lead a good life is their one desire. The sinner wakes no rancorous hate in them. It is the sin alone which they condemn. Nor do they try to show a fiercer zeal for heaven's cause than heaven itself could feel. These men I honor. These men I advocate as models for us all to emulate. Your man is not their sort at all, I fear. And while your praise of him is quite sincere, I think that you've been dreadfully deluded.
Now then, dear brother, is your speech concluded?
What, yes.
Your servant, sir.
Oh, no, brother, wait. There's one more man. You agreed of late that young Valère might have your daughter's hand.
I did.
And set the date, I understand.
Quite so.
You've now postponed it, is that true?
No doubt.
The match no longer pleases you?
Who knows?
Do you intend to go back on your word?
I won't say that.
But has anything occurred which might entitle you to break your pledge?
Perhaps.
Why must you hammer horn head? The boy asked me to sound you in this affair.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, what shall I tell the lad?
Whatever you like.
What have you decided? What are your plans?
I plan, sir, to be guided by heaven's will.
Come, brother, don't talk rot. You've given Valère your word. Will you keep it or not?
Good day.
This looks like poor Valère's undoing. I'll go and warn him that there's trouble brewing.